Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting. It's your host, DJ Impact, and I got some of the bad boys with me, and then I'm one of our special guests. Let's get to it. Simon Street, what's up?
What up, everybody?
Yes, yes, Matt Michaels.
Excuse me, I'm still with a guest. I will be with you guys as soon as I'm done working, or maybe not.
No.
Yeah, and which means if you hear those two, one person isn't here, that would be King Lucky.
So. Look, man, we cannot be upset with King Lucky. He is dealing with the official business of Smarkville Entertainment. He is dealing with his subjugated ass clowns as we speak. So please give reverence and all praise to King Lucky. That one's for you, bro.
That was a hell of an introduction for somebody who's not even.
And the voice you hear right there is Miss Micah on the line with Micah. Us. That's right, out from Kansas City. So she will be on the line with us today. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up? What's up? I'm back in the house.
Yes. We have a lot to go. We're going to go right into our 1, 2, 3 count. Let's do it right now.
It's time. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting present
1, 2, 3
Count Talk.
Count Talk, baby.
Okay, so the very first one that we're going to get to. First one, WrestleMania WTF. Now, Simon, you came in was like, man, I got a lot on my mind on this WrestleMania, how everything is approaching and coming up. What's the deal?
All right, so last week I was really, really, really busy. And as much as I'd love to have some kind of device that pauses time so I can consume as much wrestling as possible, I was not able to get that much of Raw and SmackDown in as much as I could.
Okay.
So I rewatched the whole show instead of the highlights that I had to do last week.
Mm-hmm.
Then watched this week's, and it gave me a little bit of perspective. I'm like, what the fuck is going on with some of the booking?
Okay.
Not that I'm like this and whatever. It just I notice a lot of stuff is getting slapstick together. I don't know how other people feel about it or whatnot. So, I mean, some of the matches that...
Well, throw it at us. What's got you?
Well, let's look at it this way. The whole WWE SmackDown Women's Championship, Asuka versus, we don't know if it's going to be Mandy or Sonya Deville or okay. Naomi or Carmella. I mean, it's just like, goddamn. I mean, we're talking about Asuka here. Like,
right.
Like she kicks ass. Ain't nobody ready for Asuka. Apparently, WWE booking is not ready either.
Mm.
Just me, you know.
Yeah.
Another thing that I'm excited to see, but there really was no build up per se. Was you know the United States Championship, Samoa Joe, Rey Mysterio. I felt like they kind of fell a little bit short. We're trying to build some of that up. It's fine. It's cool. You know, exciting match. But I don't know. Is it going to be kind of like you know? A bathroom break for people going to WrestleMania. You let me know, Impact, when you go.
All right.
Another thing that they're not really talking about, but I'm excited about, and I know Lucky is, he's probably just tickled pink,
yeah.
Is, you know, the Cruiserweight Championship. You know, Buddy Murphy versus Tony Nese. You know what I mean? I mean, I think that's going to be a good match, but unless you watch 205, they're not even talking about it.
Oh, shit, because it's on 205.
You know what? Don't fall asleep on 205. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a good match. Tony Nese, I believe, is going to be the next champion.
Yeah, but it's not a fucking...
What do you mean it's not a fucking... What are we fucking today?
It's a pre-show, dude.
It doesn't matter if it's a fucking pre-show.
Why would you hype it on... No,
it's part of the show. Is it not part of the show?
It's not something that you're going to hype on your fucking main shows.
I'm just saying, at the end of the day, they probably got more action than some of the matches that you may see in the actual card.
Okay, so what else you got?
You know, another thing that I don't understand, why the fuck are we seeing freaking the meat castle that is Braun Strowman enter into the Andre the Giant Battle Royal? That is an easy fucking answer.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you're going to multiplicity his ass and have them all beat one guy, I don't get it. Like,
boy,
please explain it to me.
You just explained it to yourself, Dick.
Why?
Because okay, you have a clear feud that's built for him.
Okay, go ahead, explain it to me. I'll shut up.
Well, didn't you see Michael Che and Colin Jost? Haven't you been watching this? Oh, no, that's right. You haven't been watching the show.
That's right.
At the end of the day, it's not enough to get me excited for him to be in that type of match. I'd rather see him in a different match.
Well, you have to be. You have to be excited for all these fucking.
I don't have to be excited this year because I ain't paying him to go. But if I'm paying to go, we've already heard the story about Nicholas. I don't want to touch base on that shit again.
All right, Micah, he's doing this whole thing while he's wearing a fucking WrestleMania shirt from last year.
I know.
That is true.
You got me. But, you know, and
what else you got? Anything else?
I'm still not excited about Kurt Angle and Baron Corbin. I know we talked about it last week. To me, it's just like, I feel like they should do more. They should do a lot more with this. And it just kind of did it last minute.
Well, you can give him a fucking rocking chair in the middle of the ring. Hey, happy retirement, Kurt. You'll probably be back in 3 months anyway.
You make a point there. But my fact of the matter is, there's really nothing that really is exciting to me. The only thing I will say is I would like to see Hug and Boss Connection and have them go against the Iconics. I am looking forward to that if that indeed goes down. Okay. I'm also excited to see, Beth Phoenix return. I mean, she talked about they awoke the dragon. I thought she was a fucking phoenix, but, you know, hey, Phoenix Dragon, I'm super excited. But, yeah, that's why I said, what the fuck? It's just, I know it'll come together great.
Mike, are you enjoying the monologue?
Yeah, I am, actually. It's quite entertaining.
See, she's entertained. You're not. It's okay. Just take that hand, take it off of your cheeks, and put it somewhere else.
Well, okay? No, my head will hit the mic from falling asleep. Jesus.
Well, let me ask you this. Being that we're speaking on WrestleMania, let's talk a little bit about the Kofi storyline leading up to Mania. I knew when the gauntlet match was going to be, when it was announced, I was like, okay, well, we know he's going to go through all five of them. We don't know how he was going to do that, but he was going to do that. And then the monkey wrench got thrown in at the end, and here comes Daniel Bryan comes out and pins him. I mean, what do you guys take on of that? I'm almost to the point thinking, okay, at this point, if he's going to be at Mania fighting for the championship, they almost got to give him this title. I mean, at this point, the way that it's going down, it seems like if that's going to happen, he's got to win it. I know as many times we know how the booking goes, and of course this could be a perfect example for him to lose at a Mania, but the way he's getting beat up the last few shows, I'm almost thinking this has got to be his. I mean, Michael, what do you think on that?
The storyline pissed me off.
Okay.
But what I honestly think, I think they should turn the New Day heel. I know that sounds crazy.
I like it.
This feels like a moment where the New Day should just go off the rails.
Mm.
But all three of the New Day, or are you feeling a turn between Big E and Xavier turning on him?
No, I think all three. There's turn into the new Nexus, except only three. But, I mean, the way that they're doing Kofi, it's like they're pushing him so far. The only thing is for him to break.
So,
and just turn heel. Beat Vince McMahon's ass.
Yeah, but that's not going heel, though. Remember, that's not going heel because Vince is heel.
Right.
So, yeah. So what you're essentially is the problem is that he's already booked against a heel.
Right.
So
right.
It really becomes a logistically hard to do that. The reason that Daniel got the pin is because you need to build the impossibility of him actually winning the match.
Right.
Well, I knew it was coming. Well, I knew Kofi wasn't going to make it through the... Well, I knew something was going to happen. I didn't think, oh, he's going to win the gauntlet and he's going to go to Mania. No, I didn't feel like that was going to happen. So when Daniel Bryan came out, I'm like, okay, yeah. Here mm-hmm. comes another turn.
Right.
But where...
So
it's
this
just like it's only so much.
This would be something that would be interesting now, and that is if you want to make a little bit of a relevance of the pre-show, you then put him in the Andre Battle Royal, make him win that Battle Royal, and if he wins it, then he gets to face Daniel on the main card. So this way, you bring interest into the pre-show.
You're saying that's your theory.
Well, that would be my theory. I mean, that would it would make general sense if
It'd
they
be
would
be a hell of
like
a
that.
Lot more exciting than what I felt.
Because the only thing they've got the pre-show is the Memorial Battle Royal, right? And of course, probably the Saturday Night Live guys are gonna do whatever they're gonna do Saturday during that.
Well, I don't know. That might end up happening on the
right
the main show. Noise. But you're probably gonna end up seeing. Boy, you're probably going to end up seeing something like Joe and Ray possibly on the
pre-show.
Pre-show,
tough.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no.
You're probably going to end up seeing either Asuka's match on the pre-show since it really isn't like set and booked.
Yeah.
Or maybe even the women's tag team match. So it will fill itself out. But if they want to give it a little more relevance in terms of being such a long day anyway, and to get eyes to it, that's why you put something like Joe and Ray on there as well, because now you got people who are going to tune in for 6 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, in my opinion, the card needs work. I mean, I was thinking the other day that is really underwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing short of maybe the potential main event, you know, with Becky and
is that the main event?
Maybe I said
we would hope it is.
Well, I would hope it is too. But if they build up, what did you say, Michael?
You know,
what did you say?
Outside of that, it doesn't feel like Mania. It doesn't feel exciting. It doesn't feel electric. You know, like what Mania is supposed to be.
So it just seemed like they're kind of what Simon was saying. They're just throwing sort of matches together just to get a show.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
So you're not feeling the excitement for Brock and Seth, right?
Well, it's okay. It's cool because, you know, Seth is always going to deliver.
They're going to tear the house down. There's no doubt.
But
yeah.
So that's fine. But as an overall feel mm-hmm. of the show, it feels disjointed. You know, like nothing feels really, really big. Except for, yeah, maybe those two matches.
Well, how about Batista? And Triple H?
You mean the give me what I want match?
Yeah, give me what I want. No, and the reason why I say that is because it feels there's no build. It's like, yes, they started that little thing at the 25th anniversary or whatever. That little, they sold the seeds, but they didn't water it in between. It just like sprouted up.
No constant gardeners in that at all.
Yeah, but you got Guardians of Galaxy versus Out of School. I think that was the name of that film.
It was Out of School. That shit was hilarious too.
Yeah, it was a good film.
That's really good. I liked it.
That's awesome. Well, we'll touch back on that a little bit later about that. Let's go to our next topic. Our second one, AEW, seems to have popped up this week across the news. We have possibly an All In 2 show that's going to happen in Chicago again later this year. Mm-hmm. JR, good old JR, looks like he's joined the team. And Ali has left Impact Wrestling and signed to AEW. So what's your guys' take on that as you see the development of, you know, things still happening with AEW?
Do you want to take this one, Matt, start off with?
Yeah. What TV station are they on?
no TV yet.
My man. My man. Oh, shit. My bad. My man.
That's a point there. But, I mean, overall, I mean, you're seeing things slowly come about, and maybe not as fast as
what does that sound like? To... What does that sound? Look, what does that sound? Oh, wait! Oh my God! It's the it's all the Smarks in Smarkville.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
There we go. They're starting to sing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, hey,
I will say this.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to compare what AEW's doing. So, with a quick example. So, you know, like there's a lot of females that really like a guy. And they've been in a relationship with them for like 4 or 5 years. Okay. And they know that they're going to marry this guy. And they want to marry this guy. They've made it very apparent they married this guy. Everybody in their family is excited. Oh, one day they're going to get married. The problem is 7 years down the road, bro, I ain't put a ring on it.
Okay.
He ain't put no ring on it.
Right.
That's how I feel AEW is a little bit. We all excited. Well, maybe not Michaels, but yeah. We're excited because of the pieces that could fit together.
Right.
And it could be something really great. But yeah. What we're waiting for, that ring, is actually a TV deal. Because all I'm hearing right now, and I'm not taking it away from Double or Nothing. I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic show.
Right.
I'm not taking away from what you call it, All In 2 in Chicago when that comes into fruition.
Sure.
But I still feel as though for me and maybe some other people listening, I need to hear more. Getting to the JR thing, we knew JR was going to go over there. I mean, I'd have been more shocked if they said he didn't go over there and they made it official. Ali being there, I think, is great because they need to fill up more roster spots for females in AEW. But again, where is the TV deal? Why are you holding out on me?
Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. Didn't you see AAA when the Bucks beat the Lucha Brothers?
Yeah, but I just...
No, you didn't. Because no one fucking did. Because they don't have a TV deal. And they're fucking... They're defending belts now on Double or Nothing for a promotion that's not even their own makes sense people, please get in there, get the booking committee together, start making a little sense,
right?
Start bringing everything together. Let's slow the brakes. We know that it's going to be good product because all the wrestlers are good, but at the same time, you know, at some point, Gargamel is going to invade Smarkville and kill off all the Smarks, and then they're just going to, you know, shit on the product.
And who is Gargamel?
It'd be Vince, of course.
Look, I'm just curious. Who the fuck is Gargamel? And
there's no one else.
Let me ask you, Micah, do you have any... I know we probably haven't talked to you anything towards AEW. Are you really sold, hyped, or pumped up about anything that they're saying or doing? Or you're kind of like Michaels and like, look, until a TV deal or something pops up, I really just don't care.
Well, it's not that I don't care. It's I take more of a wait and see approach. I'm just going to just ride the wave. Like, hey, I'm going to watch what you're doing. Mm-hmm. When you get what you need, holla at your girl.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with it. I think that they're going to be successful. I feel like there's definitely a place for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, work your plan. That's what I want to see, what it's going to, you know, turn into. But I'm, you know, I'm cool with it.
You can be honest, Micah, you can be honest. You can say that, you know, until like 3 minutes ago, AEW were just letters of the alphabet for you.
That's not true, Michael.
Michael about to hit you like that second grade teacher. Now, Michael, behave yourself. Behave yourself. Let me get my ruler out.
Well, cool. Well, we'll talk a little bit more as they continue to make move slowly and see what comes from that. Let's get to our third ring count for tonight. For the third one tonight, this is all dedicated to you, Miss Micah. I know you have some grievances from watching the shows, even if these happen 2 or 3, 4 or 5 weeks ago, because we haven't been able to get you on. But what's some of the things that have been sort of bothering you that we can help you get through?
You know what? I know y'all been busy with all your interviews and all the things that the Bad Boys of Vegas podcasting are doing.
Yes.
So I appreciate you getting me on.
No doubt.
So I'm a big Seinfeld fan, and I don't know if anybody's listening is, but... During Festivus, there is the airing of grievances.
Nice.
Right about now, this is my opportunity to air some grievances. One of them, actually, we touched on briefly.
Okay.
Well, for a bit, which is Mania. That's one of my newest ones.
Okay.
You know, is the lack of excitement, the lack of building, the lack of the way they did. I guess I'm old school. Being that I've been watching wrestling for so long, I guess I have kind of a old school idea of the way things should be done. And to some degree.
True.
So,
and you've been to a lot of WrestleManias as well, because we've been there together.
Oh, Simon just handed me a note that says she's not old school, she's just old.
Oh, I did not say that.
Don't listen to him. Look, first of all, Simon Street, now I'm talking to myself in third person, don't need no notepads, and I say what the hell is on my mind. And if I were to say that Micah was of any age, it's all vintage. Take a sip, last longer.
Nice.
Right on.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's my first newest grievance. But one of my biggest things was what they did with Becky Lynch.
Okay.
Is the issue with the Royal Rumble. Is that when Vince came out and said, yeah, I don't give a F if you apologize or what you did. I'm the boss.
Mm-hmm.
You're suspended. So in my mind, you automatically invalidate the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, but whoa. Time out. Invalidate the Royal Rumble. She wasn't even in the fucking Royal Rumble.
She was in the Women's Royal Rumble.
She was not.
She won it.
She was not.
Becky Lynch.
You talking about originally?
She was not an entry in the Royal Rumble.
She wasn't originally.
Exactly.
So is that what you're saying, Michael? She wasn't originally?
The Women's Royal Rumble, though.
Yeah, but she eventually became a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, she won it.
Yeah, she won it, but she didn't win it legally, so Vince has every reason to take it away from her.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Tell him, Miss Micah.
Get at him. Get at him.
Legally, she was a legal interest at the end. Finley gave her the okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're Irish. That's why.
Well, so is McMahon.
He ain't Irish.
McMahon's fucking Irish, dude.
Is he Irish?
I don't know.
Do you think? I have no fucking idea. I don't know.
Of course you don't. They all look the same to you. All us white guys.
All y'all white people look the same.
There we go.
Yep. Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh. I'm about to die.
So Finley has about as much power as, like, you know, I do when I lift 20 pounds. Not a lot.
Listen, in that moment, he had the power. Mm. Okay? It's what you do with the power when you get it in that moment.
Mm.
So in that moment, he gave her the okay, and she got in there and she won. So, but think about it like this. At any time, any rumbles in the future, it don't matter who win, McMahon could be like, yo, well, F, you won in the Royal Rumble, I'm going to pick Hornswoggle.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's really, though. No, wait. She's got a valid point.
Right.
Like when Vince won the Royal Rumble in 99, and then he was forced to put it online against Austin, who didn't win the Royal Rumble in 99, who lost the match then in the cage at St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and then Austin went on to win the title at WrestleMania. Ooh, quiet. Ooh.
I ain't got nothing for that.
Ooh.
So, hold on. So, basically, what the consensus is, Vince McMahon could be like, hola, Ovito, anytime he wants. He don't give two shits.
Well, he's definitely...
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, then what's the point of the Royal Rumble? Why don't he just pick every year?
Well, hey, technically, Micah, I hate to let you in on this.
Do you really hate it? Because you excited as a muffin.
Right.
Excited. You're right.
Technically, every year he does pick the winner of the Royal Rumble.
Technically.
Right.
Technically.
But how about this? Why don't we dispense with the formality of the Royal Rumble?
There you go.
Mm-mm.
You know?
Okay. So we could do that.
Let's do that.
Because you're right. He does pick every year. So right. Let's just do that.
Sometimes at the last minute, I think.
Well, what else you got, Miss Micah?
Well, I got a grievance about And it's a small one, but it's annoying as hell.
Okay.
Just like Simon.
Lacey.
A small one. I'm not even tripping about the annoying part, but you said small one. Come on now, man. I'm taller than you, I'm bigger than you, and I got more hardware to take care of the big jobs.
Oh, boy.
I would lay some of my hardware on this table, but I don't want to break your last table.
Oh, my God.
You know what? Hey, boys behave.
Thank you for getting us straight. Go ahead now, Miss Micah.
It annoys me every time Lacey Evans sashays her ass out there. It's like, please give this woman a gimmick. This is not a fucking gimmick. This is walking down the ramp and going back.
Yeah.
Like, please do something with her.
I thought it was top model.
Well, I don't know. Apparently,
it did not work.
Well,
do
she
something
hey,
with her.
Respect.
I'm assuming she has some wrestling talent, but how the hell would I know?
Respect.
I haven't seen her do it.
Respect our service women.
Wait,
she is
on.
Ex-military. You better respect her. What does that have to do with walking up and
right.
down?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. She's got a fine ass. I want to see her walking up and down. What are you
saying? Okay. Okay. So now we found the real
yeah.
purpose of her walking up and down.
That's right. I respect her military experience.
You respect her military experience.
Exactly.
You know what?
I want to respect her wrestling.
You know what,
right.
Micah?
There you go.
You know what, Micah? I will agree with you with that. The reason why is because I do watch NXT, and I have seen how good she is. She does need a little bit more work here and there, but I'm just saying, it's been how many weeks we've been seeing her walk down?
Yeah.
I feel like it's Emelina all over again. Like,
I know, right?
I hope it's not Emelina. I'd hate to see her go somewhere else.
Right.
They no. just gonna have her do that for the next however many weeks is left in the year.
I'd like to see her walk out in WrestleMania and whoop somebody ass.
In 2020.
Mm, still coming out.
I guess that's the only way to keep her relevant, because other than that, you know, if we don't see her, we just
think
she's even apart. So I guess they're going to keep doing that till they figure out what to do with her.
I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's why they're doing that, because once again, they bring up people from NXT and they don't know what to do. Come up with, have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
That irritates me.
True.
I'm like, you have all these people with talent, and you bring them up to walk up and down the ramp.
Oh, so come what? On, Micah. You've got a very, very unvalid point there. I'm sorry. They don't put people out there to walk down the ramp. You had heavy machinery was doing the conga line.
Wait a minute.
And we actually saw right. Noe Jose actually have a job this week.
You mean when he took over Naomi's gimmick?
He got to work. Wow. He got to be on the show.
Right.
We yeah, were asking a couple check. Weeks ago. We were like, man, what the hell?
That's funny.
I need them to stop doing that after they chopped off the top four from NXT. But that was another thing. Whatever.
Yeah.
I could be having grievances all damn night. I thought I was short on grievances, but apparently not.
So, cool. You have any more as we
No, I think I'm good. I think I've been able to use you men as therapists.
Oh, thank you.
Oh.
Therapist.
Wow.
Yes.
Vegas the Bad Boys will send you a check.
Okay. We will.
Well, you better yet, you send us a check.
No.
We're going to send you an invoice is what Impact trying to say. We're going to send you an invoice.
There you go. They cancel each other out.
Invoice. That invoice will not be paid, as y'all have no experience in that area.
Oh, don't worry.
But we serviced you.
Oh boy.
Micah,
don't worry. Lucky will be sending you the check.
Yes. Because he's working. Because he's working extra with a customer.
Well, Miss Micah, thank
you. I receive our checks.
Thank you much for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
You are always a wonderful guest. And we will definitely be tapping back at you sometime soon.
I'm going to need you to stop pausing when you say tapping.
It's kind of disturbing.
Yeah, it's just the way you say it. We're definitely going to be tapping. Like, what are we tapping? And I don't want it to involve y'all three.
This is what I deal with, Miss Micah, on a regular basis. So.
Hey, man, stop.
You know what?
Hey,
I know that because I listen to your show.
Yeah, Micah. So feel for me when you
I know
hear
what
it.
Goes on in Vegas.
Micah, real quick. Yeah. Did Mr. Impact not have a pregnant pause like he was Baron Corbin with a promo?
Oh, boy.
Okay, you're right. He did. Wait a minute. The pause was long enough just for me to have a dirty thought. It was just right long enough for that to enter my mind. So...
Well, cool. Well, thanks, Miss Micah. I appreciate it. We'll get back with you, and until then, take care.
Take care.
All right. Peace.
All right. Peace. All right. So I guess we're gonna get now started with the B. Brian Blair interview. It looks like Simon Street is taking off, and now King Lucky has just arrived. Perfect time for the interview. So let's get to it. Matt, start us off.
So, one of the things we'll get into right away is Cauliflower Alley. Being that we are the Vegas Bad Boys, we might as well get to the Vegas part of it right away. What year did you become involved, and what year did you become president of CAC?
It would have been 5 years ago, so 2014, when Nick Bockwinkel. His Alzheimer was getting very severe before our 50th anniversary. We're getting ready to have our 54th anniversary, as you know, our 54th reunion, I should say.
Right.
April 29th through May 1st in Vegas, which is going to be off the chart. There's just a heavy announcement that came out tonight at 7 o'clock for Dory Funk Jr.'s presenter. If you go to Cauliflower Alley Club or to Scott Teal's who is our EVP, Scott Teal's tremendous at Crowbar Press. He's been such an asset to the Cauliflower Alley Club that I couldn't take the time on your whole show to sing his praises. But we are adding so much talent from Dean Ambrose to Mike Aldis, the announcement tonight, who will be Dory Funk's presenter.
Wow.
There are so many celebrities in the wrestling industry coming to the Cauliflower Alley Club that aren't actually honorees. Mm-hmm. This is the most ever that since for the past 5 years since I've been president and CEO that I can remember. So people are realizing that it's not just the greatest party in the world in Vegas for the CAC reunion, but it's also the greatest philanthropy if you're a wrestling enthusiast like we all are.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And that it really does, you know, it helps out so many wrestlers who, you know, unfortunately, now I know that you were there for, you know, the whole when Jesse and Jim and everybody were talking about unionizing. Now, I've been a SAG actor for 20 years. Oh God, it's almost 21 years this year. Jeez. And
wow.
So I know the importance of having a union and having the potential when you retire to have something there. This to me is a great way to reach out and kind of give back. You know, the NFL is kind of doing the same thing too with their Players Association, retirees, you know, trying to raise funds to give back. Like, what was the mood and the atmosphere back then in terms of, you know, we've all heard, and I do remember the territories when I was younger, right before, you know, Vince kind of took everything over. We still got, you know, WCCW and AWA and all that good stuff. What was the feeling of the territories? How was it? And did anyone, you know, when Vince took over, and this became something that was proposed, did anyone even think that this could be something that would be viable to, you know, basically make a security blanket? Because, you know, you're putting your body on the line and you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, one day you might be totally healthy and the next day you could be, you know, in a wheelchair. You know, what is it and how does this, you know, tie into, you know, what CAC is doing?
Okay, let me try to dissect those four questions that you gave me. In one second.
No problem. I know. I just threw out a long one.
First off, starting with the territories, it's a shame that people don't have that option, that luxury of, in the territories, for example, my first year in Florida, Central States, one of the historians told me I worked 350 some odd matches, and thank God for the historians. I love them all. They're great because they tell me stuff that I completely forget about and forgot about, and it just is so delightful to hear that. So that's why we have an historian award each year at the CAC. But the territories were such an education because you could go and you would see the great talents, the Bruiser Brodies, the Stan Hansons, the Don Morocco's, the Bob Ortons, all the guys that were great, you know, Paul Orndorff, everybody and then, you know, you might then go from Florida with these guys and you would go maybe to Atlanta and see the Tony Atlas, Tommy Rich, you know, the Assassins, Dewey Hamilton, you know, the Four Horsemen, yeah, before they were the Four Horsemen. Mm-hmm. You'd see, and so you'd have a chance to learn from everybody. And you were always working for a different promoter, so you also learned how to basically learn locker room etiquette, respect, which unfortunately a few people didn't earn, but most people did. You know, it'd be a shame if you were in a locker room and you came back and your Rolex was missing or something. But that's, that's happened in too many places. And fortunately, that doesn't happen now. There's a different mindset, and wrestling's evolved into a whole different business than it was during the territory days. But the territory days, and Vince tries to do it with NXT, and right. he does a great job, by the way. So then the next part of your question was the union part. Well, in the territories, you never thought about that because that wasn't even on anybody's mind. But right. then when you get to, you realize that all the territories are gone and there's only a couple places to work, you know, you got a choice of New York basically at that time. And Japan's always been there, thank God.
Yeah.
I spent over 2.5 years of my life there. But Vince Sr., and I worked for Vince Sr. before I worked for Vince Jr.
Right.
And got to see the whole, how it all unfolded and how it all was made up. You know, it took... Really, Tito Santana and myself made Paul Orndorff the heel that he was. And I'm not bragging, I'm not trying to brag about this, but, you know, when you have Vince McMahon Jr. come up to you after a match that you can YouTube right now, where I had red tights on and Paul Orndorff was a heel in at the Keele Auditorium before the WWF went on to take over the territories.
Right.
It takes key guys that can build sympathy to build that one superstar heel, and it takes really good heels to feed like a Hulk Hogan to make him that superstar that he is.
Right.
So it's all a package, you know, and that's why I hate that word enhancement talent. It drives me nuts when I hear that. To me, all the guys I can think of, like Jerry Gray or Bob Cook, guys that you guys probably don't even know their name, don't even know who they are, but they were like tremendous people in championship wrestling as far as getting us over or the other guys over. And they were, when they were on the card, they were an enhancement talent. They were part of the package.
Right.
Because if you just put two guys that were your best draw in your main event and nothing else underneath them, you're not going to draw flies.
Right.
So it takes a whole package. And so to me, it's about a package. It's about a team. And so I just wanted to get that off my chest.
Well, you know what? And Brian, not to cut you off, but I think you make a great point too. In movies, you know, we're character actors. You know, everyone that rounds out the leads are the character actors. And if you don't have strong supporting actors and character actors, you don't have a good movie. And that's the same thing with wrestling. It's, you know, I don't know where they got the tag from, but it's not a great tag.
Probably the best analogy I've ever heard, Matt. Thank you. And so going on into your question, you know, when Jesse Ventura and, you know, I did a podcast the other day with Jimmy Brunzel, whom I love to death. I never had a bad argument with him, you know, other than we'd drive in separate cars sometimes because, we, you know, you can only be around your wife so long.
I agree.
So anyway, I love Jimmy, but, you know, he's a liberal and I'm a conservative, but, you know, just like my dad's a liberal and I'm a conservative. But, you know, we love each other and we respected each other always and never did anything to rock the apple cart. But Jesse and Jimmy would always talk about, why don't we have a union? We need a union, just like SAG has a union. And, you know, the reason that I didn't go along with the program and they both got 2 weeks off with no pay was because I realized that if you don't have the top guys, starting with the top guys, right, on board,
mm-hmm,
and then we were running two and three towns, so you needed like 10 top guys or teams, guys, at least to even think about it. Because if you have just the bottom to the middle, as far as where Vince was using the talent, you know, even the lower talent at times could be main event talent, just depended on, you know, what territory they were in, who liked them, who didn't like them. As you guys know, everything's political,
right,
in the business. It's all about politics. And not all about politics. I shouldn't say that. If you don't have talent, you're not going to make it.
Right.
But, true. And Vince, especially right now, looks for guys with integrity.
Right. Yeah.
And more so because he's learned, you know, you can have a very talented person and they can blow it all just by lifting up a flight attendant's dress or something.
Yeah.
Right.
As an analogy, because that did happen.
Yeah.
But, so anyway, so now you've got a lot of guys with a lot of integrity, with great talent. I mean, there's so many guys that have, you know, equal talent, but Vince and Triple H and all the guys that run WWE Corp are going to look for good talent, but talent that is coachable and talent that will represent them in a good light. And back in the territory days, you know, it was just, they would put up with anything as long as you drew money.
Right.
So there's a lot of differences there, but the union, I doubt because Vince, I don't know how you can be called an independent contractor. This is my one kind of dispute or thing that I disagree with Vince with, because I own many Gold's Gyms. Well, not many. I own four Gold's Gyms and sold the rights to three more. So I own the seven Gold's Gyms or four outright, and then part of three other ones in Hillsborough County, and then I sold them when they weren't for sale. Thank God. It's the best time to sell. It's the best time to sell something is when it's not for sale.
Right.
And so, you know, I had Steve Kern, who was is one of my age, probably, well, him and Paul Orndorff are probably my two best friends. But Steve Kern became one of my managers, and anyway, he became, he did very good. And anyway, you had a strong camaraderie with the boys, but not strong enough where they're going to give up. You know, they've got families to feed. They've got other motivations, whether it be self-motivations or whatever. They've got things that in their own mind that they're not going to sacrifice for
right,
everybody else. So you can't have a union unless it starts from the top down. It can't start from the bottom up.
That's a very good point, mm-hmm, yeah. What's amazing to me, too, is when they flipped the coinage of sports entertainment, to me, right then and there, I think SAG should have pursued it to try to force them to unionize, because they openly admitted it wasn't a legitimate athletic competition. So therefore, like the NBA, you can't, you know, try to unionize them because they're professional athletes. But here you got something that you're literally going, it's entertainment. They're athletic And, you know, what you guys do is something that, you know, most actors can't do. But at the same time, you know, to me, that's saying, hey, you know, we're actors. And I think that that would have been like the perfect time for SAG to do something. But again, you know, this is why Cauliflower Alley now exists, to help everyone out. And is there something that sticks out to you that is the key to Cauliflower Alley, like something that is above and beyond anything else that you would, you know, say right off the top of your head when someone asked about CAC?
Yes, I'll answer that first, but I want to segue back into the question that I really didn't finish answering.
No problem. But,
the Cauliflower Alley Club is there, just like you were talking about. The NFL has that; they do have a union, but there are other people. They can only do so much.
Right.
Just like you as an actor or stunt people, anybody in SAG has a limited amount of benefits.
Right.
Well, and a lot of times that doesn't, you know, cover the cost of what somebody needs. Whereas, in, you know, since we have no union, many times the Cauliflower Alley Club is paying for chemo, radiation, doctor's appointments, things that people can't afford. And that's a shame, but that's where the Cauliflower Alley Club picks up. And there's even oftentimes, since we have such a good relationship with WWE, they will help individuals, and it just may not be enough. So the Cauliflower Alley Club is kind of like a gap insurance, if you will.
Okay. Yeah.
But, and then going back to the point I wanted to make is, how does Vince get away with calling us independent contractors?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which has a lot to do, Lucky DJ, I'm sure you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
Oh, yeah.
As an individual contractor, you have very little responsibility. You don't have to meet payroll taxes.
Yep.
It's like I started with the Gold's Gyms, and that's the point I was going to make. I had aerobics instructors, and I couldn't tell the aerobics instructors that they had to work for me and not work for LA Fitness or World Gym or whatever.
Right.
They could work wherever they wanted to because they were an individual contractor, and because I was not going to take that on as a payroll liability and pay all the different taxes that I would have to pay on them. Because there's so many different instructors, they're individual contractors. They can work where they want to work.
Right.
WWE, you cannot work where you want to work. You are told what to do and when to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you get fired. That's called an employee to me.
Yeah,
that's
so
true.
So, you know, how they've gotten away with that, I don't know. But, you know, whatever works, you know, I'm not at all knocking WWE. I'm just saying that it does put a little more pressure on the boys because mm-hmm. they have to, it's 1% more taxes to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just have more responsibility. As not an employee, but as an individual contractor versus, you know, you're in all actuality an employee.
Right. And as an independent contractor too, what really sucks is that the company is avoiding the taxes, but you as a person are paying those higher percentage taxes because you are your own entity as well.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly right, man. So, you know, if you went back, you know, I guess the IRS can only go back 7 years, but you're talking about major money, and I'm a WWE stockholder, shareholder, and, you know, you just, that's one of the best things I ever did was buy WWE stock. It's one of the best stocks ever. And plus it pays a good dividend.
Right.
It's almost hitting an all-time high now.
Yeah, what is it? It's getting close to $100.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we got one of our friends who did the same thing. He made the investment early and claims that when it hits $100, I think he's like, what was it, buying dinner or something? He's to celebrate. So
I don't look at my portfolio every day, but you know, I know the last time I saw WWE was at 92. I believe.
Yeah, it was at 97 this week. 97 approaching 98.
Really? Wow. Yeah. I just, you know, I'm a long-term investor. I don't, you know, I've got a family and, you know, and I retire someday. We'll tap into that and I'll look a little harder, but I've got a great financial advisor that I trust with all my heart, and he's done a great job for us.
Brian, this is Lucky. I want to ask you a few wrestling questions here, and I just want to know, going back, and this is a long time for you, what inspired you to get into pro wrestling?
Oh, that's really easy. Well, in a way, it's not easy, but in a way, it is, because when I was a kid, I grew up in Gary, Indiana for the first 10 and a half years of my life. And on my block, the Ferlanos lived next door. I had one white kid that was a friend of mine. There were several Hispanics. 80% of our neighborhood was black. About 1% was white.
Yep.
And I had a Polish kid, because we all would, you know, they'd call me a Swede or whatever, or an Englishman. And it was really funny. You know, we didn't have prejudice. Nobody knew what, nobody talked about, yo, you're this or that. I mean, we all loved each other and grew up in harmony, and you know, all this divisive stuff is created through politics, whether right. most people realize that or not. That's primarily how it's created, but or at least they throw the gas on the fire anyway.
Right.
So anyway, I grew up like that, and you know, morphed into a time where my parents were having a very difficult time and decided to move to Florida. And the first thing I see is WTOG Channel 44, Gordon Solie, championship wrestling from Florida. But I went to church before I left Gary, Indiana, not too long. And the sermon was on the power of prayer. And it's the first time I'd been to Big People's Church. And I heard the minister kept saying, you know, if you pray earnestly, God's going to answer your prayer. If you're a good person, God's going to answer your prayer. If you pray earnestly and righteously, God's going to answer your prayer. This whole sermon, I'm listening, listen, listen. So I get home that night. I don't say anything to my parents. And I'm thinking about, man, what do I want to pray? What do I want to do? And I said, well, what if I had a Corvette? Or, you know, do I want a blue one or a red one? What am I going to pray for? Well, you know, then I'm trying to rationalize it in my mind. I'm thinking, well, I'm not old enough to drive. They're going to take, I'm not going to look at the car and drive.
It's funny.
Then I said, well, what if I pray for $1 million? Well, what's a, you know, 10-year-old kid going to have $1 million? They're going to take my money away. I'm sitting here trying to think. And all of a sudden I said, I know what I want to be. So I got down on my hands and knees. True story, swear to God. And said, dear God, I want to be Superman. Please help me to be Superman. And I prayed that prayer so long until, you know, finally I shared it, because I kept looking in the mirror, bumping my head, doing all this stuff to try to see if I was transforming into Superman. Putting a T around my my neck and jumping from bed to bed, but never flying. And so I told Billy Kempinski, my best friend, kind of, yeah, at that time, and he said, oh man, you can never be Superman. He lives on television and he's a fictitious character that, you know, does this, that, and the other. Well, you know, when I speak to kids, I said, be careful what you pray for, because maybe I didn't have an S on my chest and a blue cape or red cape, but I certainly had a costume. I lived on television. I could run the ropes like a speeding bullet, leapfrog a man with a single bound, and have a 300-pound man jump on my chest and tell you the story today. So,
that's awesome. That's
so
awesome.
Anyway, Gordon Solie, Jack Briscoe, seeing those guys, that made me say, I want to be a professional wrestler.
Really quick on the note, so you used to watch the George Reeves Superman series as a kid then, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Never missed.
What was your favorite episode? Do you remember?
Yeah, there was a few, but when they found out that he was susceptible to kryptonite.
Yeah.
That broke my heart.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you it was episode 183B or
yeah.
You know,
No,
but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. That's because I love that show. Growing up as a kid, I watched as well as The Lone Ranger. Those were like the two things that, as a kid, I was, you know, influenced, like you said, and want to be a superhero. And to this day, I think the one that sticks out in my mind is when Superman was it was like a gangster. Someone was posing as Superman and doing bad things. And Clark couldn't, you know, reveal that he was Superman because he, you know, he got into trouble. Something was, you know, keeping him from that. And it was just that simple stuff that they did like that, the storytelling. And I think that that's one of the things to me today that I want to see more of in wrestling, because that translates, like you said, you can be a kid, want to be a superhero and become a wrestler and get the chance to tell those kind of good, you know, stories.
Absolutely. And even as a kid, you know, I'm innocent. I've never had sex in my life. I always wanted to see Lois Lane and Superman kiss. I'd see them make out, you know.
Nice.
But, of course, that didn't happen, you know, in those early days. That was a little above what we were allowed to watch on TV.
Yeah.
But, right. You know, even though you'd see the flirt in the eyes and all that, you knew they were a boyfriend and girlfriend. Kind of. But just all cute stuff. And by the way, I did love the Lone Ranger and Tonto and the whole deal. You know, that's all great stuff.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I got another question for you. I kind of stumbled across this one. But I hear you have a killer Coco Beware story from riding down the roads. And I was wondering if you could tell us about it.
Yes, I can. Are we allowed to say whatever we want? Yes.
Whatever you want. That's why we're called the Bad Boys.
I love it, the Vegas Bad Boys.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Love the Vegas Bad Boys. So anyway, we're driving down the road in the Bill Watson's territory, then Mid-South. And whenever Andre was in town, Andre and I had a tremendous relationship, and it started with Dusty Rhodes in Championship Wrestling from Florida, and you know, Dusty and I were very close, and so, you know, Jack Briscoe and Andre got along good, and these guys were my mentors, so, you know, Andre was actually, well, actually they kind of really cemented the bond. When they'd let me hang out with Andre and them when they were hanging out, and Andre obviously would always like to hang out with Dusty and Jack, and you know, the top guys. Andre loved everybody, and I bet especially not everybody. No, I shouldn't say that. wait a minute. But he loved you know, the guys he loved, and it was an irrevocable love. It was just the man has more integrity, had more integrity than most men I could ever tell you about. But I had a van or rented a van because I had J.J. Dillon. it's terrible. Ronnie Garvin, who is known to be bisexual.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was married, but he was still bisexual. And trisexual, he'd do anything. and then it's Coco's in the passenger seat. I'm driving, and Andre, Ronnie Garvin, and JJ are in the back. And you know, everybody's getting a little toasty. You know, in the old days, we always drank and drove down the road. You can't do that anymore, obviously. But you know, it's like Dick Murdoch used to hit a beer bottle 9 out of 10 times going 70 miles an hour. He'd hit the speed limit sign from the driver's side. True story. So it just came to my mind since we're talking about Mid-South. And we were going I know we were heading back to Tulsa, and it was either from Arkansas or Mississippi. And so we're heading to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we're driving down the road, and Coco and I are laughing, and they're in the back. You know, it's like it's hard to carry on two conversations when you're in a big van, and we had a little bit of music up front, and they're drinking. Like, I don't know if you know about the Giant stories, but he basically ate breakfast, and from then his whole meals were alcohol, and everybody knows that, you know, Giants basically lived to the age of 32 to 34, but I think he was fermented and just lived till he was 46, 47. So everybody's laughing, having a good time, and all of a sudden I hear these guys talking in the back, and I hear a couple of things that didn't sound quite right, but I'm trying to talk to Coco at the same time, and I hear Andre say, Coco. And Coco turns around. He says, yeah, boss. He said, Coco, come here. I want to tell you a secret. Okay, boss. So he leans back. I don't even remember if he had seatbelts in. But yeah, I remember he leans back from that white van, from the chair, the captain's chair in the van. And he said, yeah, boss. He says, here. And I'm looking in my mirror now. I can see everything in the mirror. So I'm looking, and all of a sudden, Andre grabs Coco in a front face lock. And Coco's going, I can't tell what, really how hard he's holding me. But all of a sudden, Coco's going, hey, boss, loosen up. What are you doing? What are you doing? And he rips Coco from the front seat into the back seat and turns him backwards towards Ronnie Garvin. Give me the Garvins. Jimmy, Ronnie, and Terry.
Terry
Garvin. I just saw Ronnie at Legends Lunch. We're getting ready to have our 20th Legends Lunch, but that's a whole other story. But I just saw Ronnie last month, and we actually talked about this story because he thinks it's hilarious, too. So Terry's in the back. Terry Garvin, not Ronnie Garvin. Forgive me, Ronnie's home, heterosexual, totally. I don't want him to sue me here. Terry's in the back, and he's got a Woody in his pants. You know, you can see it. He's grabbing, and he says, "Oh, I want some of that black ass." You know, da, 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 da. And I'm thinking to myself, "What the heck is going on here?" And JJ's laughing. You got to get the story from JJ too. This is one of his favorite stories. And so, all of a sudden, Coco starts screaming, "Hey, what are you guys doing? What are you guys doing?" And I hear Coco's pants go. Rip the back end wide open. I'm saying, hey guys, oh, whoa. I turn the radio off. Come on now, none of the colors, please. And they're just laughing, not paying any attention to what I'm saying, none whatsoever. They're just in their own world. And all of a sudden, I look in the mirror, and Terry's, spanking his Woody on top of the back of Coco's ass. With his pants ripped, and I'm going, oh my gosh, man, we're going to prison. Something's happening. This is terrible. And Coco is screaming now, trying to get away, and Andre's got him cinched down so hard he can't, if Andre puts you in a front face lock, you're not going nowhere.
Right.
And so Terry's got his legs on top of Coco's calves, his knees right there on top of Coco's calves, and he's snapping his holly rocker on his ass. And I'm going, holy cow, man, this can't be happening. And I said, I gotta do something. And all of a sudden, I hit the brakes to turn over, and I hear Coco go, I can't swear that he lost his virginity.
Wow.
But anyway, he says he didn't die, and I kind of believe him, but you'd have to ask JJ, because he had the rear view seat, So finally, I pulled the car, I pulled the van right over, and Coco is crying and screaming, and I don't blame him, I would have been too. And he runs out of the van, and he's running down the highway now, and he doesn't know what to do. He's just running down the highway, and I'm saying, guys, look, man, this is terrible. And the boss is going, oh, new joke. And I'm thinking, I didn't want to say anything to the boss, so I'm jumping on Terry's ass. Saying, Terry, why'd you do that, man? Well, that's terrible, man. What are you going to do, man? You can't be doing that kind of stuff. So I cut a promo on Terry, and it took almost an hour to get Coco back into the van.
Wow.
Andre had to personally go out and and guarantee him, apologize to him, number one. Hugged him like a, it would look like a little 2-year-old kid hugging a gigantic, you know, giant.
Right.
And it's like he's bent way down, and Andre's consoling him and saying he's sorry and all this kind of stuff. And so they finally get him back in the van, and Coco's drying his eyes and all that. And I, you know, I was crying. I had tears in my eyes. I mean, I'm saying, oh man, Coco, I can't believe this, brother. I'm so sorry, man. I hope everything's. He said, no, you know, anyway, Terry's wife wound up sewing his pants back up, and they got his pants. They got his pants from him, and did some other nice things for him, and they wound up being friends. So I doubt very seriously that that break that I hit, you know, caused any penetration.
Awesome. And for the listeners out there, remember that three of those people in that story were LJN action figures.
Oh, that's right. I don't think they've
done like that. Yeah. So, you know what? Speaking of stories, you lived with David Von Erich for a year, right?
Year and a half.
Really? And what was it like living with David? Because David was like smoking hot popular at that time, right?
Oh, absolutely. All the Von Erichs were. I talked to Kevin constantly. I mean, my wife and I were just, last year we spent 4 days in Kauai. We're actually going back there in August. Kevin wants me to stay for 2 weeks. I can't stay here for 2 weeks, so we're going to go to Tahiti after that. But nice. Anyway, he's got 31 acres. 10 acres are wetlands, but who cares? You're in Hawaii. 31 acres he has right across from the beach with caves. What do you call it? The cliff diving. It's got cliff diving. You can go underneath the caves, waterfall. Wow. I mean, this is an oasis that you wouldn't even believe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Kevin survived all the tragedy. I watched, Doris Atkinson is, I read my Bible every day. You know, I'm not perfect, believe me. But I love the Lord, love God. Don't know what I'd do without my faith. But it helps me realize that I can get down on my knees and say, God, please forgive me for this tomorrow. So anyway, she would always have food cooked for the whole family. I mean, she was like a perfect mom. Fritz was always like the dad that, oh, God, I could tell you another story.
Sure, sure.
Fritz was like the perfect dad who was very straight. And so he thought that, you know, Brian Blair is an angel. Well, Brian Blair is not an angel. He never has been. And, you know, I'm always a good guy. And as far as I know, I don't have, I've had six shoots in the business. I never started one, but I never lost one. And you can ask me who those are later. But you know, it was like, to me, like a great mom and dad family situation. Chris, I remember Chris and always wanting to, you know, there's a lot of girls around. We all know all that kind of stuff. But, you know, he always, he's like 12 years old, just begging for whatever leftovers he could do. Mike was kind of introverted and I never even thought Mike would get into the business, but
right.
I could have seen younger Chris getting into the business. But then it was of course Kevin, and it was David, and it was Carrie, and yeah. they were the stars, and they were huge stars. And they'd come up to Oklahoma. You know, I was married the first time. I was married for a year to Mike McGurk. Long story, but anyway, we're still friends. Good girl. Almost got shot. You probably heard that story.
Yeah.
You know, living with them was a tremendous growing up experience, and especially for that time in my life. Fritz would put $100 bill cash every week in my paycheck and say, please watch out for my sons.
Wow.
And I always tried to do that in a good way, you know, in a kind of leadership role, even though, you know, they were much bigger stars. This is their territory. I'm just lucky to be there. And they had a lot of respect because they came to my territory where I was on top, and they were the semi-main event. And we would, we had a lot of respect for each other and still do. I mean, Kevin and I are really tight, obviously. But the boys were, I mean, there was drug use. There was a lot of things that most people, you know, parents especially, don't want to hear about their children.
Right.
But, you know, I would try to be the mediator and say, you know, okay, one joint's enough. I use that as an analogy. So, it was always good. And, you know, none of us got in any trouble except for one time. And, you know, it was just a lot of love from their family, a lot of understanding. They were like my second parents, Doris and Fritz. And I have no idea. I think suicide, knowing Eddie Graham, Mike Graham's son, and most people don't know that Eddie Graham's dad also committed suicide.
Really?
The grandfather. Somehow that gene must run in a family, and you either get that or you don't, because that, you know, I know Kerry was under a lot of pressure. When David died, I was there. I mean, when David died in Japan, it was the most horrible thing in the whole world.
Yeah.
To me, it just crushed me. And, you know, after that, it seemed like things kept spiraling a little bit out of control. You know, Fritz would drink every night. You know, not be a belligerent drunk, but you could tell he wasn't happy.
Right.
And for all your listeners out there, money is not happiness. Trust me.
Right.
Happiness is what you choose to be. When you wake up in the morning, you can choose to be happy and say, hey, this is going to be a great day regardless. Or you can choose to be miserable. It's your choice. It's that simple. You know, we all don't have everything we want to have, but if you have health is wealth, and people need to realize that health is wealth. You know, as long as you can eat and you got a roof over your head, I mean, you know, we can always strive, and we should strive every day to be better. And I'm not going to lecture anybody, but that's just my philosophy on life. And, you know, all the boys were really happy. They always seemed happy. But when something tragic happened to one of the family, reverberated around the whole family. I mean, if something happened to one, it happened to everybody. They were that close. I mean, yeah. Jackie, 6 months old, who none of the boys that we all know, I never knew Jackie, but he died, their first son, when he was 6 months old. A lot of people don't know that. The first Von Erich, or Atkinson.
Right.
And then, you know, just watching Kevin, him and Pam were madly in love and wound up getting married, and they're still married and have a beautiful family. You know, the boys are successful, great talent. Their boys, Ross and Marshall. You know, there's a lot of things that I look back then that, you know, were wonderful, and a lot of things I would say, gosh, Lord, please don't let my kids ever do that.
Yeah, and especially, too, it hits me hard because Chris was just a little older than me growing up. And, you know, it's just like when you see that and Mike, and it's just like, and then, you know, Kerry ultimately, it just, you know, they were one of the biggest influences, I think, when I was young, especially Kerry, because it was at that peak around 86 that I really was just absorbing everything that I could get my hands on. And, you know, just a shame how everything then, you know, eventually went down with them. At the same time, too, do you have any stories, or did you get a chance to work with Eddie Gilbert?
Oh, yeah, I was around Eddie several times, but we never actually got to work any programs or anything. I worked with his dad a lot.
Okay.
I mean, a ton. And, you know, it really broke my heart to see what happened, what Eddie went through, and ultimately, you know, his death. And he was a tremendous talent. And it's like Chris, you're telling me now about Chris.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen Chris, but in 86, I was with WWF. And, you know, it was hard to focus on anything else.
Yeah.
It was like the greatest thing that ever exploded.
Right.
And you're just not paying attention to the territories that are trying to hang on. And, you know, I was there when, like I said a little earlier, you know, you when we were building up Hulk Hogan, Tito and I, and when the heels were building up, I'm sorry, when we were building up Orndorff and
right.
the heels were building up Hulk Hogan, you know, you're into all that and you're making more money than you ever thought about making in the business. You know, I was making, you know, 350 grand with my merchandise and stuff, which back then's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money today.
Yeah.
So, you know, just, but the guys in the same position are making $1 million.
Right.
So, you know, but it's all relative. And, you know, it was a great time. And when you were in, when everybody that got there, you could probably ask everyone, you know, you kind of lost touch with a lot of the people that were still trying to hang on in the territories.
Right. Right. And speaking of one of those people and keeping on the topic of, you know, unfortunate deaths, as a kid, I was terrified and yet loved Bruiser Brody. And what was it like just being around Frank and getting a chance to, you know him? And I mean, I can't get enough about the stories about Bruiser.
Oh, Bruiser, Frank was, him and I were so tight. You know, I speak to Barbara a lot, and his ex-wife, his wife.
Yeah.
She comes to CAC every year. She'll be at Cauliflower Alley Club in 6 weeks, and, you know, we'll have a half-hour conversation or whatever, and it'll bring us back to, you know, those great memories of Frank Goodish, Bruiser Brody, who taught me, again, in Mid-South first. Well, first in Florida, actually. I remember in Florida, I was kind of upset that Dusty booked me with Frank.
Okay.
Because I was getting a push, but Dusty wanted to beat Frank the next week, so he wanted me to do a job for Frank, which I didn't mind at all. But I just thought, why are you going to do that to me when I'm coming back, you know, in an important match as well to support you? And to me, I thought it was bad booking at the time, but it's neither here or there. But rather than doing what he was told to do by the office, Frank was always a renegade and did as he thought was best for the business in his mind. So he gave me one of the best matches of my early career, without a doubt. He wound up taking me through the chairs. He wound up getting DQ'd.
Okay.
Wouldn't do it. He wouldn't pin me. He just, for some reason, and I don't know why, because we weren't nearly as good of friends as we became. We were just more, you know, locker room acquaintances and respectful to each other. And, you know, he would tell me little things when he'd see it, and he kind of took a liking. He knew I played football because he played football. He knew I wrestled. He knew that I came from, you know, very humble beginnings. You know, I actually got busted taking food stamps to the USAID, which is another story. But anyway, he knew a lot of things about me that I didn't realize he knew about me. And that night, for some reason, he decided that he wasn't going to listen to the office. And so he put me over via DQ. And it was one of the best things that, I mean, it got me over big time in Tampa, even more so. He even got juice. I mean, not scripted. He wasn't supposed to get juice. And Dusty was really pissed afterwards. And basically, Frank said, if you don't like it, go F yourself. You know?
Wow.
That's the way he was. I mean, that's why he got killed, unfortunately. In Puerto Rico. But I loved Frank. He was just, when you were on the road with Frank, you would eat tuna fish for breakfast, tuna fish for lunch, and tuna fish for
dinner. Yep. That's what I've heard.
You had to get that 40 to 50 grams of protein along with whatever else you were going to eat. That was just the opening. That was always your appetizer.
Appetizer, yeah.
Before we'd go eat eggs and bacon and all that other stuff we could eat, we'd have to have a can of tuna fish. he taught me how to, and usually that was cooked in the room, one of those little plug-in things. Frank would scramble up some, throw a dozen eggs in this pan, and he had one of those heater things.
Yeah, the little hot pot, yeah.
Yeah. Scramble up the eggs, you know, throw a pound of bacon in there, and the room would smell terrible. I mean, it's like, right? Between tuna fish, bacon, you got to know what that room smelled like. So you might get fined for smoking, but, you know, you could cook. So Frank was great about teaching me diet routine. You know, he never did dumbbell curls for anything for his biceps.
Really?
He did all power moves.
Wow.
He did deadlifts. He did presses. He did long rows, squats. That's what he did.
Wow.
A lot of people don't know that about Frank. He never did. I mean, he might have done them when he was in college or whatever, but for the years that I was around him, he was the same routine. You know, he said, Brian, I don't do biceps because I get my biceps when I'm pulling, and I get my triceps when I'm pushing. So I don't isolate those muscles. They're secondary muscles. And, you know, this is Frank talking to me. These are secondary muscles, and you're going to work out your secondary muscles when you're working out your primary muscles. When you're pressing, you're working out your deltoids and your lats. When you're pulling, you're working out your lats and your biceps. And, you know, when you're squatting, you're working your quads and your entire body, which is the number one exercise, according to Frank Goodish, that you can possibly do. To squat.
I got to ask you, Brian, this is Impact, or DJ. Do you keep up with the current product of wrestling today? Anything at all?
Yes.
Which ones?
DJ, yes.
Yeah, all of them. Raw, SmackDown. You watched them all?
A lot of them. I mean, I just watched a great match the other day at ROH between the Briscoes and the Young Bloods. Tremendous tag match. I wish I could have 30 minutes to sit down with both of them. I could have taught them.
Yes.
How to get 10 times more out of that match that was tremendous and make 3 or 4 matches out of that one match and preserve their body so when they're an old man like I am, you know, they won't be hurting.
Yeah.
And I hurt, believe me, you know, every day from what I did. And, you know, we were considered kind of flyers, but we didn't do near. When Mick Foley came along, he just raised that bar so high.
Right.
Oh, I'm sure.
ECW, you know, just started raising the bar for all these moves so high, you know, that, you know, Vince now, I remember in WrestleMania 4, I was in WrestleMania 2, WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 4, and I was at WrestleMania 5, and Vince paid me for it, but I had given my notice in Salisbury, Maryland a little bit before, and he knew I didn't want to do a job. And anyway, he just – we never worked. We were supposed to be in the Battle Royal or whatever. Jimmy stayed around and, you know, kind of got jobbed out. And I know I was going to tell you that I didn't know about Jimmy earlier when we were talking. We're doing a podcast like 2 months ago or less, and he told me that he sued Vince before he even got to the WWF, and that he won.
Wow.
And I had no idea about that. And then he sued him again. And so, you know, I'm thinking, wow, my heart's getting dreary. I'm thinking, oh, I got Hall of Fame on my mind. I just, you know, I'm in the Iowa Hall of Fame in Waterloo, but I'd love to be WWF Hall of Fame,
right.
WWE Hall of Fame. You know, we'll have to see what happens. Although I was, you know, I was just at the press conference here in Tampa. As you know, we're going to have WrestleMania 26 here in Tampa.
Right. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
I think it's fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. And, you know, the first thing Hulk Hogan comes out and the first thing he says, he goes, ABBB. You know, you can go look at it on Twitter right now. And then the mayor, awesome. The mayor, Bob Buckhorn, our current mayor, who I beat in a countywide election. People don't realize how big Hillsborough County is in Tampa. I beat Bob Buckhorn in a countywide election where over 500,000 people vote. That was in 2004. we are larger in Hillsborough County than 10 other states. So that's like running for governor. And, you know, it's a big job. And so I couldn't believe the mayor came out after sending out mailers when he was trying to beat me. We were in competition to win the seat. I should say to be more politically correct. We were in competition to win the election. He sent out these mailers with my action, me and when the action figures that you were just talking about before the before the New Jacks came out, these were the LJNs.
Right.
He's got these on postcards and a picture of me in my wrestling tights, and it says, "Is this who you want to be for your next county commissioner?" And then I'm thinking to myself, "Thank you, Bob."
Yeah.
You know, people like wrestling.
Yeah.
They don't realize people really like wrestling, and you know, I had already had tremendous business acumen. I mean, it's public record, so you can go look. I sold my net profit on Gold's Gym was $2.1 million. And so I was obviously knew a little bit about business and a little bit about life, and not just a stereotypical dumb wrestler, which to me, there's so many look at Mick Foley. I mean, that guy's a genius.
Yeah.
There's so many intelligent wrestlers. It's unbelievable. Look, I mean, Kane just got elected mayor of a small town in Tennessee and,
Knoxville.
City. I mean, Knoxville, you know, in Tennessee. Well, it's Knoxville. So that's not really a small city,
yeah.
But, compared to Tampa. But anyway, and it's a beautiful place too, and he's doing a great job, by the way. And I've given him a lot of the things that hopefully he'll implement there. But that's a whole another subject. But Glenn Jacobs actually helped me move my first gym to my second gym, and he was so strong. I mean, it was unbelievable. It took two guys to do whatever Glenn did. You know, he'd take the big weights and just boot strength and onto the dolly or whatever. He was the best helper, and I never thought he would. I knew that he had a lot of potential. There was no doubt about that in becoming a wrestler, but he obviously became a much bigger star than I ever was.
Well, let me ask you. I got one more question, because you talked about how you watch the current product. What's your favorite tag team right now of the current superstars in any organization?
Oh, gosh, that is such a hard question, DJ. There's so many good teams right now. I mean, you know, I honestly like the ROH tag teams of who I just mentioned, the Briscoes and the Youngbloods. I love both of their work ethics, their gimmicks, just everything that they do, except they do too much of. I love those guys. And in WWE, I mean, you know, obviously the Shield, you know, I mean, you've got, you know, different teams. It's nothing like the tag teams of the 80s. I don't think that's going to happen again. And, you know, Vince decided that, if you guys don't know this, he decided that he no longer wanted teams to dress identical, because if you split them up, they're going to be kind of labeled as that
killer bees.
So you can't be Brian Blair and Jumpin' Jim Brunzel, you're going to be the Killer Bees. So he wanted to do that, so he did that. And you know, we're honoring Tonga, you know, Fafita, Haku, and Barbarian Simone, who were the Islanders, who we got to work with a lot,
right,
in WWF, WWE days. Tremendous tag team. I'm so excited about them being honored. And, you know, I don't pick those people. The whole board, actually all of our members give us suggestions. Our life members give us suggestions, and we take them from there.
Right.
And the honorees have to pay their own way, their own expenses, except, you know, they get a table to sell their gimmicks, or if they want to, and we give them a couple reunion tickets. But if you look at Jack Briscoe's eulogies, it lists four accomplishments. his most popular eulogies, and that was being the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the NCAA champion at 191, was it? Anyway, the NCAA champion, right. And winning the Luthez Award and the Men's Wrestling Award for the Cauliflower Alley Club, so it shows you the relevance of the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Right.
And where was I going with this here? You asked me who the best tag teams were now. My favorite tag teams were. I know that's how it opened up, DJ.
Yes.
But you guys got my mind wandering so much. This is a great show, man. Vegas Bad Boys. You podcast listeners are fortunate to be listening to this podcast.
That just means we gotta bring you back a second time, too.
Right.
Sure, man. I got more stories than Carter's got liver pills. You got so many things swirled by my mind as we're talking, and you guys bring up these questions, so forgive me for kind of blanking out there.
Well, that's okay. Let's get an opportunity to quickly, before we wrap things up for this time, because we definitely will talk to you again for sure. Killerbees.net, and what's going on with the comic book that is that you guys have done for the Killer Bees?
I'm sorry? Thekillerbees.net is that's a store that you can go to online to buy any kind of, you know, masks, pictures, books, all kinds of stuff, updates on where we'll be. Like, I'll be in Griffin, Georgia for UWF, which is a big rising promotion, if you guys don't know that. Ronnie yep. Gossett runs it. I mean, he's got a lot of money backing him, so look for some good things from them. I for one would be the last one to put a dollar into the wrestling business, but thank God for the people that do. And I wish them all the best. And Ronnie's got a lot of good things going on right now for him. So I'll be there. I'll actually be picking Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff up from his house when I get to Atlanta, and taking him to Griffin, Georgia on Saturday the 6th, April 6th. Then on the 13th, I'll be in New Jersey for Kevin's show there, the IWF show. Then the Cauliflower Alley Club at the end of the month. And I'm booked pretty much two to three weekends for the rest of the year. So I appreciate everybody out there that still appreciates the legends, all your listeners. It's so humbling to me when people come and they tell me things that they either saw on the WWE 24-hour channel, before this was before I was born, but I hope it doesn't offend you. So now I'm 60 years old now. I mean, you're not going to offend me. I don't care, man. I'm just breezing through life, and I'm glad that you know my name. And the people are so wonderful. I mean, they buy stuff. I had a person buy a mask the other day, and he literally wrote a letter almost that, I mean, it had like, I'm not kidding, 10 different phrases that he wanted me to sign on the mask. So the mask, the black and yellow mask, looked like a big tabloid or something when I mailed it to him, and he sent me back an email. He says, I can't believe you actually did that. You know, I can't believe you wrote all that stuff. He was so excited. But, you know, we do things, both Jimmy and I do things to really make the fans get what they want and appreciate. It's like, I have always had the philosophy, if there's 10 people there or there's 100,000 people, you work as hard as you can because they bought a ticket. And I remember when I couldn't get into a wrestling match because I had no money, except Steve Kern let me carry his bag up the stairs so I could get into the matches for free. And that's how I got in to see almost a year's worth of matches.
Wow.
Because of Steve Kern's generosity. Huh. And, knowing again, my situation was publicized pretty well in newspapers and things like that. So, it's just it's so humbling. And to have, all the things that we have, we update the store, the killerbees.net. It's a great place. You know, hope your listeners check it out.
And there was the other thing I was trying to get to was the comic book that you guys did.
Yes, the comic book, well, that's just the first issue. Issue 3 comes out. Issue 3 will be out before the end of the year, and that's the first issue was Be Brian Blair, and it's a true story animated on how I, just like I told you guys about how I got fascinated about the industry and how it moved me into then going to the WWFE. And Jimmy's does the same thing. His just came out a couple months ago. And then it ends with both of us speaking with Hulk Hogan. Ah. Because Hulkster kind of put us together with Vince, even though Vince was bringing me in. That's when Vince wanted to create the tag team division. And Terry had come from the AWA, and him and Jimmy were good friends.
Right.
And you guys obviously heard of the High Flyers were a great tag team. Right. I love Greg, too, by the way. Greg's a super guy, Greg Gagne.
Yeah.
And so Jimmy and Greg were a tremendous team, and I thought, wow, what a great opportunity. I really like it. And so anyway, Terry got us together, so the comic books end there. And so then the new comic books will issue 3, and we have issue 3, 4, and 5. We're inked for 3 more. So it's really becoming hot. The comic books are really, really becoming hot. And you can get an autographed one for $15 at thekillerbees.net. And I give most of my money to charity anyway. So
excellent.
Well, I'd say charity to my charity, my favorite charity, which is the CauliflowerAlleyClub.org. And we have guys like we mention all the names that want us to mention them, but guys like Kamala, yeah. Mr. Wonderful, Bobby the Brain Heenan,
yeah.
So many guys that made millions of dollars that fell on difficult financial times, and without the Cauliflower Alley Club, many of them would have lost their house. They would lose, their car. It's Brick House Brown. If he would have known about the Cauliflower Alley Club 6 months earlier, he would be alive today. Because when Rocky Johnson called me up and told me, have you heard of Brick House Brown? I said, yeah, I heard of him, never met him, but I know he broke in Florida. We just never worked in the same territory. He says, well, he's got cancer and he needs some help. He's down on his luck. So he gave me his number. I called Brick House. Find out he's got supposed stage 2 cancer. Long story. We send him to a doctor. The doctor that diagnosed him with stage 2 cancer is just giving him pain pills because he has no insurance.
Oh,
no, wow. No, nothing, which is really a sad, sad thing. Mm-hmm. And I understand that you cannot have, I'm not going to get into politics, but I'll tell you, you cannot have Medicare for everyone. The country will go broke. But you can have a program. There should never be somebody with cancer that has to live on pain pills. That's right. Ridiculous. So we sent him to a doctor. The first doctor that he wanted us to send him to, once he calls me back up, he said, I was almost in tears, and Brickhouse says, Brian, the doctor wants me to have my testicles cut off tomorrow. I said, what? Oh. He said, yeah, he wants me to have my testicles removed. He said, I have stage 4 cancer and it's going into my bones.
Oh.
And it freaked me out so much. I called Bruce Tharp and I called some other guys. He's our legal counsel. Called the board and, said, no, we'll definitely pay for it. I asked if they'd pay for if we could pay for a second opinion, of course, get a unanimous vote, yes. So he goes to the next doctor. The next doctor says, no, we're just going to take some tissue out, diagnose you. There's no sense in removing your testicles. So this one doctor, and I say this so your audience and everybody else will please get 2 opinions, and if you have something serious. But how do you know about the Cauliflower Alley Club? Because we wound up paying for radiation, for chemo, for the beginning of all this stuff that he had to have until some of our people could help him get disability and the things that he needed,
right?
Which he ultimately got, and he finally came to the Cauliflower Alley Club, had a wonderful 6 months. I just picture him smiling. You could go to Hannibal TV and check out his speech. Was just, he won the first Courage Award. When you see the Courage Award this year, most people, I can't even tell you who it is, you're going to cry. It's gonna be tremendous, and it's gonna be an award that we give away, because I've convinced the board members that this is what we're about, and if people are willing to, you know, show that, we need to let the good people that support our club. It only costs $25 a year to join the College Bar Alley Club.
Yep.
And you get 4 awesome issues of the year, which is an award-winning newsletter that Royal Duncan does for us. It's just tremendous. Plus a certificate that is in the center of my awards room. And, you know, it's like the biggest fraternity, sorority type situation that you can imagine. Everybody goes there, and it's like, wow, where have you been for a year? You know, and it's a blast. But at the same time, we're raising money for these people that really are people that, you know, were our heroes. You know, not Superman or the Lone Ranger. I mean, we'd always want to help Tonto and all the guys, but these are real guys that are living right now, and that need everybody's help. So I just highly implore everybody, you know, if you can afford $25, join the Cauliflower Alley Club. If you can afford to come to the reunion in Vegas, we have $43 rooms. It's $125 for a reunion ticket that covers all the events, tremendous seminars, two absolutely tremendous meals, which include the honoree presentations on Tuesday and Wednesday night. So it's a tremendous investment. Part of it's a tax write-off if you need a tax write-off. So, you know, you join for a life membership, it's only $300. And I know that's a lot of money to a lot of people. I shouldn't say only. And I remember when I didn't even know what a $100 bill looked like. So, So anyway, it's $300 to join for a lifetime, and it's a wonderful thing. And I appreciate so much the Vegas Bad Boys podcast allowing me to pontificate on the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. We'll definitely, like I said, we'll be in touch with you in the future, because the stories are wonderful and there's so much to be said. You know, it's just so important that people, you know, get an idea of, you know, not only what the past was, but what you do now for so many different people. And we'll definitely be, you know, covering the CAC this year, and getting out there, so that if you as a listener can't make it to Vegas, you'll definitely get a feel and hopefully make plans for next year, you know, start saving the money and be able to come next year, because it's a really special weekend. It mm-hmm. just keeps getting bigger every year, and it is just wonderful the work that everyone associated with CAC is doing, and we appreciate seeing that. And I'm sure you've touched more people with what you do, you know, in your life and through your faith and through your, you know, your charities and just, you know, helping people out. And I think that is one of the most important things, you know, that a person can do.
Well, thank you, Matt. You know, I believe in loving everybody regardless of any situation, creed, color, religion, political, whatever. We all have to love each other and care about each other. That's what kind of makes the world go around in a mm-hmm. more harmonious way. And maybe next time Lucky and DJ will get to ask me a few questions.
I know, man. Taking up all the time.
You know, it's always a good show when they are listening to what you have to say. Because that means it's going well, because they're enthralled.
Oh, yeah. True that.
So I appreciate it. And I'll come back on your show anytime you ask me.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay, guys. Thank you, audience. God bless you all, and have a great week.